Iranian director Jafar Panahi is currently banned from making films, but he's prominent in the debut documentary by Indian director Srimoyi Singh. I'm Tom Powers, and this is Pure Nonfiction. Srimoyi Singh grew up in Calcutta. During college, she became obsessed with Iranian cinema and poetry, so much so that she made several trips to Iran, learned to speak Persian, and made a film about her journeys called And Towards Happy Alleys. For the past year, it's been making the rounds of festivals with stops at Berlin, CPH Docs, Sheffield, and more. If you're in New York on April 18th, I'll be hosting a screening at the IFC Center. The title, And Towards Happy Alleys, is taken from a poem by Farooq Farrokhzad, who was a major inspiration for this film. Farooq was a poet and a filmmaker who rebelled against conventions in both her work and personal life. She died in a car accident at the age of 32 in 1967. Srimoyi also became entranced by Iranian film and set out to meet her heroes. In her documentary, a key figure is Jafar Panahi. He first rose to international acclaim in the 1990s, starting with his film The White Balloon, about a girl who wants to buy a goldfish that won prizes at Cannes and other festivals. Throughout his career, Iran's government has clamped down on Panahi. During the pro-democracy Green Movement in 2010, he was imprisoned, then placed under house arrest and banned from making films. He responded with a project called This Is Not a Film that he made under house arrest and had smuggled out of the country in 2011. It was a few years later when Srimoyi first met Panahi. He allowed her to film him even though he hadn't been interviewed in 2 years. She also meets his actress from The White Balloon, Aida Mohammad Khani, who's now a grown woman. Other prominent figures in the film include the human rights lawyer, Nasreen Sotoudeh, and the filmmaker, Mohammad Shirvani. Throughout her travels, we watch Srimoyi forge bonds by singing a beloved Iranian song in different settings. Normally, Iranian women aren't allowed to sing in public, but Srimoyi has a bit more freedom as an outsider. The best place to begin this conversation is with the poetry that inspired her. I asked her if she would read something by Farooq Farrokhzad.
You know, there's so many choices I have because there are all the poems are just so evocative in so many ways. But this is something that I've never read before. I want to read this in continuation of what I was saying earlier about how she created this or generated this language of the body, of expression, of desire, of feminine desire, where when it didn't exist, there was no such language before her. So this poem is called The Sin. She talks about desire like it hasn't been talked before in Iran.
I sinned, a sin all filled with pleasure, wrapped in an embrace, warm and fiery. I sinned in a pair of arms that were vibrant, virile, violent. In that dim and quiet place of seclusion, I looked into his eyes, brimming with mystery. My heart throbbed in my chest, all too excited by the desire glowing in his eyes. In that dim and quiet place of seclusion, as I sat next to him, all scattered inside, his lips poured lust on my lips, and I left behind the sorrows of my heart. I whispered in his ear these words of love. I want you, mate of my soul. I want you, life-giving embrace. I want you, lover gone mad. Desire surged in his eyes, red wine swirled in the cup. My body surfed all over his in the softness of the downy bed. I sinned, a sin all filled with pleasure, next to a body now limp and languid. I know not what I did, God, in that dim and quiet place of seclusion.
I mean, this was path-breaking in so many ways because she speaks about body, she speaks about desire, and she does not censor herself. So Farooq's fight was from the beginning against wailing. And it's not just the physical act of wailing your body, but wailing your thoughts, you know, which is so poisonous. And also going back to the film, there is a sequence, if you remember, in the film of two men talking to me in a taxi, where they talk about modesty and how they don't care about outer wailing, but they care about how modest women should be, which is dangerous. Farooq fought against this concept of inner wailing, or how it is expected of women to be modest and women to censor their desire, women to be womanly, you know, like a ladylike. So Farooq's fight was against all of this. And sometimes she used language like this, which really brought back thought. At least people would begin thinking about the act of expressing your desire. So that's why I read this poem.
Can you describe how challenging it was for you to make this trip to Iran, or how unusual it was for people in your peer group to be doing this as opposed to anything else that you might pursue?
Yes, it was. Everyone was very amused. Nobody, and I can say it because I've really researched this, nobody did something like this before me. Went to Iran, began learning Persian to make a film and do a PhD thesis. So I was doing this for the first time. But, you know, the first time I went to Iran, I was 25. So at 25, I didn't really think about all this, that, you know, there's no one else who did it before me. I just was so, you know, it's like the act. It's like falling in love. You fall in love and there is no rationality, you know, there. You just fall and you want to run towards this love, or you want to fly towards this love and allow it to enrich you in so many ways. And there is no making sense of it when it's happening to you. So everyone asked me, why Iran? But then they knew that I was so passionate and curious about Iranian cinema. But people were also a little worried, especially my mom was worried but she was also very happy because this was the first time her daughter told her that I want to do this. I want to go to Iran and make this film. So she was both worried and she was both excited, but she just said, please call me twice a day. Because, you know, the way mainstream media or news showcase or shows Iran is very, it is an Iran where people are either villains or victims, you know, and it is this politically explosive space. And, you know, of course it is, but nobody ever spoke about how kind and generous and welcoming the people of Iran would be. And that is something I kind of understood through the cinema that I watched and the poetry that I read. And that was what was taking me to Iran. So I knew that the Iran I was going to was going to be this space where people are going to welcome me, because I also felt that as an Indian, I'm very close to this culture. And that was what was drawing me towards Iran. I didn't feel like it was their story. I really, after reading Farooq's verses and watching Panahi's and Kiarostami's films, I felt that I belonged here. You know, it is also my story. It is my story of understanding how to protect my own voice and people around me. So I was going to Iran this way. People were obviously scared and, you know, just how normal things are, you know, how perceptions are of spaces. People perceive of India as a space where there's just poverty. You know, so there were perceptions about Iran similarly. But once I was there and I was giving updates to people, everyone was very relaxed. And the film actually, and towards Happy Alleys, shows the other face of Iran, that we do not see in news, in social media, you know, and films in general. It is not the politically explosive face of Iran that, let's say, news already shows us, but it is the intimate side of Iran. And it shows how people are happy and people have hope of living despite living in a world where you are censored each moment. So despite all of that, there is happiness and joy of living. And I've tried to capture that joy through the film.
And let me ask you what the title means.
The title is Bekuche Khoshbakht in Farsi and towards Happy Alleys in English. It is borrowed from Farooq's poem. The way I remember Iran is the joy that I perceive from people, you know, the resilience, the smiles despite the suffering. Somehow the smiles and the joy overpowered the violence that happens because of how people retain the desire to continue living, the hope. So this is how I look at Iran. Iran is in movement to reach happier alleys. So towards happy alleys is bringing attention to the movement, to the ongoing struggle, and it's going to lead to happier alleys. We are going towards happier alleys.
So when you get there, we see in the film you make contact with Jafar Panahi, one of your heroes. He says to someone in the film that he's letting you film him because you're doing a PhD thesis on Iranian cinema, and he hasn't given an interview in 2 years, but he seems quite congenial to talk to you. Can you talk about how you made that connection?
The first thing I did after going to Iran was I was very clear. The first time I went, I didn't know that I'd be going back 5 more times. I just thought that I had these 3 months and I'd have to, you know, meet Kiarostami or meet Panahi and do all of this and learn Persian in this 3 months time. But then from the very beginning, while I was learning Persian, I told everybody, all the people I met, that I'm doing my PhD thesis on Iranian cinema. I want to meet filmmakers, so please connect me to them. So there was this perseverance from day one because I knew that maybe I'll never be able to come back. So, and everyone helped me so much, Tom, I cannot explain it. I think this film happened the way it did because everyone connected me to everyone they knew. So by the time I met Panahi, I had already met people like Nasreen and the other filmmakers that you see in the film. And in front of me, they were calling Panahi and saying that there's this girl who's come from India. She's a PhD student and she's making a documentary on Iranian cinema. You've got to meet her. So, and this was happening when I was there. So by the time I met Panahi, 5 or 6 people had already told him, including the human rights activist Nasreen. But it took the longest time to meet him. So when I finally met him, it was just a week before my ticket to India was bought. But then Panahi sent me a message on Telegram a week before I was going, saying, "Hi, Srimoi, welcome to Iran. Let's meet tomorrow." And the way he just, you know, sent the message, it was so exciting and surprising and all of that. But then I said, "I can't meet you tomorrow because I have my final Persian exam. So let's meet after that." So he was like, "Okay, the next day." So I went to meet him with my camera and lenses and sound recorders and everything. And Panahi was everything that I didn't expect him to be, you know. We are talking about someone who's been banned from officially making films from 2009 because he actively participated in the Green Movement that happened in Iran. And his films have, you know, the government directly censors his films. He's not allowed to show his films in his country. But after 2009, he has been given a 21-year ban on making films officially. So he cannot make films officially. And yet he does. He's made a few films even after that, but in an unofficial manner, not working with actors and, you know, taking risks while making films. So I expected to see a person who was battling with censorship. I expected that he'd be a little more serious. He perhaps would be a bit more dark and depressed and cynical, but he was like the sun, you know, he was shining with energy. He was full of joy and he's full of mischief, and he would always, you know, joke about little things. And the moment he heard that I've been singing Persian songs, everyone he'd go to, everyone he'd meet, he would say, "Shrimo is from India and she's going to sing you a song." And there's a scene in the film which happens in an optician's store, and I'm meeting this optician for the first time, and he just pulls one on me, you know. He says, "Okay, so sing that song that you know." And it's that scene is full of mischief and innocence, and you know, I didn't know what was happening then, but I just started singing. And this is a very popular eternal love song called Sultane Galba that recurs in the film many times. And it's really enticing, the song. Whoever I'm singing it for will have to join in. The song has that kind of energy. So that optician started singing with me. You know, and it's the scene has got a lot of energy. But then Panahi closed the doors of the film of the optician's store because he didn't want sound to go outside the store, because it's not allowed for women to sing in Iran. So a lot of this happened, and there's a very funny incident with Panahi which is not there in the film, but I'd like to share it. You know, one of the days when I went up to Panahi's apartment to meet him, I wait at the door and I see his iguana, you know, standing at the door, and Panahi is not there, and I am a little transfixed, and I'm like, "Oh, okay." And then Panahi comes and says, "Shake hands with him and meet Iggy. You have to befriend Iggy so that, you know, I am friends with you. It's a condition." So then he took the camera from me and started filming me shaking hands with Iggy. So you know, this is who he is. He's full of life. He's so vibrant. He's full of joy. And that is the joy he brought into the film, not suffering that he feels. And Iran is like that. None of the characters or the people that you see in the film talk about how terrible life is. But they talk about how joy can be extracted despite the terrible circumstances people are living in.
So to go back to this song that you sang, is it a song from an Iranian film?
It is. It was a part of this film called Sultane Galba, which translates as King of My Heart or King of Hearts. It's a film, Farsi, a popular genre of cinema, melodramas that was made in Iran between the 50s and 60s. So this film is from the 1968 in Iran. So this is a popular love song, and it talks about, you know, it talks about love and the plight of a lover who is separated from the beloved, and how he wants to, you know, he's just dying under the pangs of separation. But then it's just such a popular, also cliched in so many ways, this the expression of love. But, you know, in a place like Iran, this becomes so important. And a song like this can become a language of protest, because you are not allowed the act of loving. You know, in a place where you see people are executed every day, where half the people all the artists who can bring about a change are in Evan prison, you know, singing a simple love song and singing it in a community, singing it loudly with people, is an act of protest. And in so many ways, because I made this film over a period of 7 years, the film acts like a premonition, you know, to what happened in 2022 when the regime murdered Mahsa Amini, and this infuriated people.
So just to clarify, you're referring to a death in September 2022 of a young woman who was arrested over a hijab law and then beaten by police that resulted in her death. And then as a response to that, brought a wave of protests that was happening in fall of 2022.
Yeah, it began right after that, where she was killed because she was caught by plainclothes policemen who circle every street of Tehran. Just the only job is to pick women whose hijab might have just slipped a little bit off their heads, or, you know, a little bit of hair is perhaps visible. And Mahsa Amini, this young girl, was picked up by the police because of this, because of improper hijab in quotes, and she was beaten to death. This spurred a huge wave of protests, not just by activists and filmmakers or people who are initiated, but little children went to the streets, you know, teenagers. So many teenagers have died protesting what happened and the atrocities of the regime. And so many people have been executed. You can't even count it anymore. So even after this happened, this song, Sultani Galbha, came back into the public sphere. And there are so many videos that you might find on Instagram and other places where Iranians post, themselves in large gatherings singing this song loudly. So, you know, in times like this, music and expression and poetry are all that people have. And sometimes to sing the simplest love song is, you know, a big act of protest.
We jumped to 2022, but your first trip to Iran was in 2015, am I right?
Yeah, in the December of 2015.
And then you made several other trips after that. After you made your first trip, can you talk about what was compelling you to keep going back?
Yeah, I went to Iran for the first time in 2015 and I stayed for 3 months. And honestly, that is when I filmed at least 65% of what you see in the film. So it was the major chunk, like all of Panahi's sequences were filmed during that time. But I kept coming back because I had a structure and a few bits were fully done, but then it's a film, you know, it's a documentary, and it's my journey above everything else. It's the journey of an Indian falling in love with poetry and Iran, and the cinema of Iran. And she goes to Iran to understand where expression stems from, despite the political conditions that people live in. So the journey wasn't complete, you know, in the sense the journey pulled me back. The film also is like the act of walking, where you have a goal, maybe, but somewhere down, you know, walking itself becomes important. And all the interactions that you have with people. Every time I went back, I met interesting people. I met Nasreen, I met Panahi. Then I went back because the other character in the film, Mohammad Shirvani, I felt, you know, his bit wasn't ripe enough, you know, it wasn't complete enough. So I went back to find him, but I couldn't find him when I went to Iran. And then I figured that he is somewhere in the islands of Hormuz, which is in the south of Iran, lost, wandering, writing. And then that's where I filmed him. I went back to find the women that you see in the film, the actress from White Balloon. I knew that she's in Iran, so I wanted to go back and film a little bit more with her. So the first 3 months gave me a structure, but I felt the need to add a bit more, you know, a bit more about of lived experiences, because we know that documentaries come to life through lived experiences, especially a film like this, where I grew in the process of walking or this journey. And also people around me wanted to share their stories, and that needed a little bit of time. And that was 3.5 years off and on, traveling between Iran. So I went back 5 more times and I stayed 3 months each time. And in 2019, I decided that I finished filming and I'd start editing.
Early in the film, the first thing we hear you say, you're in the car with Panahi and you ask him, is it okay to film here? And the kind of tension of when you can film and when you shouldn't be filming feels like it's an undercurrent throughout the whole film. Can you talk about that? You know, what it meant to be making choices about when to film or not to film?
Yeah, that's a very, very important thing to talk about, because by the time I met Panahi, I was stopped so many times. When I was trying to film in public spaces, and within the first 3 minutes of the film, you see that I am stopped by a lady in a bus who just turns directly at my camera and asks me, are you filming me? And, you know, I kept that short because that was very, very important, an important movement in my understanding of the language of this film. Because you see, till before that, I was like this, it felt like I was watching live Iranian cinema, you know, happening live before my eyes. Because when I went to Iran, it really felt like a deja vu. It felt like, you know, I'm actually watching a film all the time. So my instinct, and I couldn't resist it, was to film everything. Until that lady in the bus stopped me and she turns towards me and says, are you filming me? And you mustn't. And that shook me. And at that point, I realized that this cannot just be observational. It cannot just be about someone who is in love with Iranian cinema, comes with a camera, decides to make a film. But it has to be something where, you know, it has to be a film where I interject this reality by speaking to people in Persian and allowing people to trust me to tell their stories. So henceforth, I started learning Persian so seriously because I thought, if I don't learn Persian, this film is not going to happen. So I gave my life to learning Persian. And henceforth, the film takes a very day turn where you see me in the film. You see me speaking to people in film, even if it's really, bad Farsi, because I began learning. But I speak like a kid in the beginning. But people humored me and they were just so happy that I took the pain to learn a different language to tell their stories. It wasn't me just with a camera, but I was learning Persian and I made the effort to talk to them. Henceforth, everything changed. People started speaking to me in buses. They were okay with me recording them. The mood of the film changed. I sing in the film. I make jokes. People, you know, make jokes at me. You know, there's this exchange that is happening. People film me. I film them. The camera passes on hands. Panahi films me. My friends film me. So it takes a turn. And that's why I kept that one shot, which is very uncomfortable for me also as a filmmaker. But I decided to keep it. Because only if you see that shot, you realize how much the language has changed henceforth. So I, by the time I met Panahi, I had been told by people, oh, you can't film here. Your hijab has to be right. You know, you have to be careful. So when I met Panahi, obviously I didn't have to ask his permission, but I was, you know, it was like a continuation. So I asked him and he was always open to being filmed. He had this habit of saying cut a lot to me and he would say, cut now. And afterwards I just said, but why? You know, you can't ask me to cut. But then that's the mischief in him. He also wanted, you know, he through me, Panahi looks for people because he's not officially allowed to make films, but through me, he was exercising a little bit of filmmaking through me, you know. He felt like this director and it was great. I mean, so even when as a filmmaker you are banned, a person like him figures a way to tell his story by using people from society. And that is also something that I've tried to capture in this film.
So you described that the one of your entryways to falling in love with Iranian cinema and poetry was through the work of Farooq Farrokhzad. And then you wound up living in a house where she had lived. Can you talk about what that meant to you?
That was truly a gift that this film gave me, you know. When you actually, I was inspired by Farooq. And from the beginning, I knew that I'm going to go to her resting place. I'm going to go to her grave and just sit there for a bit. But then when I went there, I saw so many people, some lighting candles, some sitting by her grave, listening to her poetry. And that was also a gift. I didn't expect that, you know. So many years after her death, for her to be remembered and actively celebrated the way she was. But, you know, through the film, from the beginning, there were ways in which I would constantly find Farooq in the streets, you know. Something in the street would remind me of her. And then the final surprise was that I was living in Farhad's place. Farhad is this actor who features in the film, who acted in a couple of Kiarostami's films. And Farhad request, you know, he asked me to stay with them because he really liked to hear me sing. And I was also filming him. So he asked me to stay with them. And just one day while we were having lunch and the camera was on, because my camera is always on, he gets up and says that, you know what, see, this is the rent document of Farooq. She lived in this house and here is a signature. And I flipped. I didn't expect that at all. I had food in my mouth, Tom. You know, it was just so exciting and so rewarding. And that is the gift of cinema and documentary, I feel, where you follow something, you follow a poet or you love her works. But then this is the serendipity of filmmaking where you are rewarded in so many more ways that you can't even expect. And I think this film is full of little accidents, little happy accidents like this, where I was living in a space, in a room where Farooq lived. That was just such a surprise. But the film is full of some accidents like this. And yeah, it just makes me believe that no matter how difficult nonfiction filmmaking is, you keep making films because you're going to be rewarded in so many fulfilling ways.
I want to ask you about the act of singing in Iran, because you say that you had a little bit of an extra liberty as an outsider, that people would invite you to sing in a way that Iranian women would probably not be allowed. Can you talk about your experience with that?
I look very Indian, you know. So even in Iran, I looked very Indian, you know, sometimes. And that's also an advantage I had. So whenever I wanted to film in the streets, I would wear clothes like this, very colorful, vibrant yellows, greens. So people would know that she's a tourist and she's filming. So when people asked me to sing also, I mean, they knew that as a tourist, let's allow her to sing. Let's let her sing, you know, let's have her sing. Because, I mean, I was a tourist. I was an outsider, but I picked up Persian songs and I was singing like an insider. So while for so many years since the formation of the regime in 1979, around 45 years, women were not allowed to sing publicly in the public sphere, these people asked me to sing. And when I sang, it felt like, they felt so much joy hearing a woman's voice singing in Persian. So number one, I was allowed to do it because I am Indian. But what happened is each time that I sang, everyone joined in. So that space of forbidden expression would magically open up. And there was no stopping them then, you know. There's a scene in the film where I am singing and school children are told that she's going to sing, do not sing with her. But when I sing this song, this love song, Sultane Galba, it's irresistible. Everyone has to join in. They must join in. So I start singing and all of these school children, school girls who are not allowed to sing, they start singing too. And it's electric, you know, it's just so joyful. So music opened up this space of expression, which is not given to women in Iran. So that's why music becomes such an important theme in the film.
Can you sing a little bit of that song that you're singing near the end?
Okay, sure. Sultane Galba. Ye dil mi ke biram biram, ye dilam mi ke naram naram, taqat na dare dilam dilam, bi to che kunam. Pishesh ke ziba ziba, kheli kuchi ke Dunya, dunya, boyade toam, harcha, harcha, tarkat na kona.
So Iran and India are different places with different measures of constraints. What do you take from the experiences of this poetry, from the experiences of the people that you met on this journey? How does that speak to you, specifically as a woman living in India?
When I decided to make this film, and the love that I felt towards Iran, it didn't feel like it's them. It felt like it's my story, because I've grown up in a place like India where, as a woman, I've not been allowed to express the way Farooq, you know, did, the audacity she took from society. You know, she fought for this voice. She was not allowed to do it. She was, you know, the audacity, the fierceness, the boldness that she took away, which was not given to her. I didn't know that I can talk about what I feel in the way that she did. So, I mean, I didn't feel like this is not my story, because, you know, that India is becoming another Iran. You know, in the same way religion is being used to brainwash people, the right-wing government is really taking our space of expression away from us. If it's cinema, if it's music, if it's poetry, it's all... We fear that it's all going to go away from us. And I wanted to go to Iran and find out how they continue doing it, how the fight must go on. And in this process of 7 years of making this film and meeting these people that I did, I found some answers. And I just know that it's not their struggle, it's our struggle. This film is about Iran. It's shot in Iran, but it is a film that speaks the universal language of reclaiming our space back, our bodies back, our voices back. This space of human expression is ours, and we must fight to claim it back. So I feel that it's my story too.
Thanks, Srimoyee Singh, for speaking with me. Her film, And Towards Happy Alleys, continues to play at festivals. If you're in New York on April 18th, join us for a screening at the IFC Center. See our show notes for tickets. You might even hear her sing.
Sultane galbam to hasti darwaze hai.
Thanks to our team, series producer Hannah Nordenswan, newsletter manager Bella Racklin, and web designer Cross Strategy. Our theme music is composed by Andre Williams, and our executive producer is Rafaela Nehausen. I'm Tom Powers. Follow us on Instagram and sign up for our newsletter at purenonfiction.net. Tamanna ayar ziba.